Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable!
Mayweather makes a pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact, I'm the best, you know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 171 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Jumping right back into it. Fight reviews this past Saturday, the 2nd of April, from the Newcastle Arena in Newcastle. Savannah Marshall gets the third round knockout over Femke Hermans, and this is for the WBO middleweight world title. We talked about this last week. Obviously, the plan, and it obviously seems like it's still going in motion for this summer, is for Marshall to go up against Clarissa Shields. You said, I believe, that they had fought in the amateurs and Marshall beat her, right? And you keep picking Marshall. I mean, I think we talked about when we previewed this fight last week, I had mentioned, okay, well, she needs a knockout. You know, she's been knocking everybody out, which is, For women's boxing, it's a breath of fresh air because we don't see that many knockouts. But I think, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it, or maybe if I was thinking about it, I didn't even mention it on air, but I mentioned that Savannah Marshall, regardless, needed a knockout to keep that momentum going into that Clarissa Shields fight. People would have still been interested, but with Marshall, you know, knocking all these people out, especially this last one before a scheduled bout with Clarissa Shields, it only adds more intrigue and more interest in that bout, which I think is going to be in the UK. Has that been confirmed that it'll be in the UK?
It's not been confirmed, but I think, you know, the fact that Clarissa signed with Sky Sports, and I think now people are starting to realize she's not a draw in the US. I think it will be in the UK and probably in the Northeast. You know, it'll be in like the home turf for Savannah Marshall. Like I said, I think she did what she had to do. You know, she went in there, she beat Femke Hermans, and, you know, Femke Hermans went the full 10 rounds with Clarissa Shields, and also Hannah Rankin went the full 10 rounds with Clarissa Shields, and Savannah Marshall managed to get rid of Hannah Rankin, I think, in round 7. So they're two, you know, opponents that they've both fought. You know, Savannah Marshall's managed to get them both out there. I think she's 10 knockouts in 12 fights, which is like 83% knockout ratio, which is unheard of in women's boxing. So yeah, she's a breath of fresh air. You know, that's the sort of thing that we've been needing to get it to where the women's MMA is. You know, the women's UFC fights, the headline cards, they do good numbers, whereas, you know, when these female fights do that now, like Clarissa Shields tried to do a pay-per-view, and I think the pay-per-views were in the hundreds, you know, wasn't even in the thousands for how many she sold. And next thing, you know, I think she had finally admitted defeat, and now she's gone over into the UK and she's fighting over there.
Yeah, I think that fight does belong in the UK. I think that's where you'll get the most bang for your buck. And it's possible that, I'm pretty sure wherever they fight, whatever date it is in the summer or what have you, they're likely going to headline that event, I'm assuming. Does it sell out? I mean, what's an ideal venue you think they should put it at, or it would likely be at? Like, what's maybe the top two from your perspective?
I think it'll go back to where it was. I think they got a good, you know, crowd in the Newcastle Arena. I believe that's around 10,000. I think that's, you know, a decent amount. The price of the tickets, right? You know, Savannah Marshall gets that home crowd. People will come because, you know, Clarissa Shields has that Floyd Mayweather thing about her, where, you know, people love her, or they'll just be there to hopefully, you know, see her, you know, get knocked out or, you know, lose, just to kind of like shut her up, because obviously, you know, she's very vocal. You know, she rubs people, you know, the wrong way, and she rubs some people the right way. So, you know, people will probably go there to see that. But it's just, you know, it's a good fight. It's definitely up there, isn't it? It's like, I think we've spoken about a few times, like, which is the bigger fight now? Is it Savannah Marshall against Clarissa Shields, or is it the, you know, at the end of this month, April 30th, we have, you know, Katie Taylor against Amanda Serrano?
You know what? You know what? I think because of the knockout power that Marshall possesses, I think I'm more interested in that fight in Marshall Shields.
I think in terms of like how I phrase it, like the bigger fight is obviously Taylor Serrano.
Well, yeah, in terms of popularity, attention.
Yeah, but yeah. I would say like in terms of intrigue now, yeah, I would agree because of this, you know, Savannah Marshall knocks people out and, you know, for all we know, Clarissa Shields could be up on the points, but at any moment, we know that Savannah's got that knockout power and she may take her out. So it's kind of like watching Wilder. You know, she's got that kind of power, that, you know, that fight turning power. So you can't at this point. It's one of those fights where, how many times have I said it? Like, female fight comes on and you watch a couple of rounds and you're like, okay, fighter A is going to win this on points, right? Okay, I can go grab some food, I can go and get a drink and stuff like that. Whereas now, when you're watching Savannah Marshall, you can't do that, because at one moment, boom, you know, that's it, it's lights out. So, which is good, you know. At last, we want to see that. We want to see, like, I watch boxing, I watch MMA. I want to see, you know, the women's division be as good and as strong and have those fighters like the Amanda Nunes and all those guys over in the MMA. So, yeah, it's good. Definitely good for women's boxing at last to see this fight finally get made. Two of them in the space of a few months. Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano. How long have we been waiting for that? Savannah Marshall, Clarissa Shields. Both pretty much since they turned professional, they've been, you know, on their individual paths that was always leading for this big fight.
So you're still sticking with Savannah Marshall, I'm assuming, by knockout?
She knocks her out? Yeah, she knocks her out.
Really?
Savannah Marshall knocks her out if she engages. If Clarissa Shields' face, when the camera went to her, when Savannah knocked her out, she took like a big gulp of her own spit. You could see she was kind of like, oh shit, this girl's got power. Whereas, you know, Savannah Marshall was in the crowd laughing, pretending she was asleep when she was watching Clarissa Shields. Clarissa Shields didn't look like that. You could see she was kind of like, oh, okay, you know, this is going to be a fight. And I just do wonder whether Shields would be like, you know what, I'm not going to engage. I'm going to box from the outside. I'm going to keep it amateur style. And, you know, I'm just going to fence and stay away from her. So it's going to be intriguing as well, because Clarissa Shields she's only got one loss. So it's going to be, if Savannah starts well and she's down on the cards, how does Clarissa handle that? Because she's never really had to handle that. And can she, you know, is she going to be like, kind of like a spoiled child and kick her toys out the pram if she's down? Or is she, you know, is she game enough? Is she professional enough? Like, is she going to be like, you know, okay, let's go. I can regroup. I can come back from this. So it's intriguing. But yeah, I'm sticking with my original. I think Savannah eventually catches her and knocks her out.
See, I'm still sticking with Shields. I think how you brought up the point how if she engages, Marshall, I think, catches her. But I don't think she's going to engage. I think she's going to try to box her and kind of be on the bicycle a little bit. But it also comes down to, like, in terms of resume, I think even though Clarissa Shields doesn't have the knockout power that Marshall does, I feel like Shields has fought the better quality and caliber of opponents up until this point, which obviously has helped her better herself as a professional since that loss in the amateurs to Savannah Marshall. I mean, which makes this fight a lot more intriguing, obviously. But I agree with that, though. I think if they engage, I think Marshall catches her. But I don't think Shields is going to do that. I think she knows, like, especially how you just described how they put the camera on her when Savannah Marshall got the knockout. And, you know, she didn't look too pleased or too like, oh, man, you know, this isn't something I'm looking forward to. But I think she's smart enough. I think Shields is smart enough to recognize that. And she's going to try to outbox her as much as she can. And it might get to the point where Marshall gets frustrated and she's just going to try to walk her down and try to catch her, you know? Like, I feel maybe that Shields is going to be ahead on points as the rounds get deeper into the fight, possibly. And Marshall's corner is going to tell her, like, hey, you're losing on points. Or, you know, you need to step it up. Go after her. And Marshall's going to try to go after her, but Shields is going to, you know, kind of be on the bicycle a little bit and try to just outbox her, like a Floyd Mayweather type. That's my theory. But yeah, I'm sticking with Shields. I think Shields beats her by decision. It'd be crazy if Shields knocks her out. And you know what? There's a part of me that's kind of thinking that Shields is actually because of the knockout power of Marshall, and everybody's like, oh, you know, she's been knocking everybody out, and she just knocked this person out in front of you. You were sitting front row. I mean, wouldn't you think it'd be wise for Shields to be working on her power during this training camp? Like, hey, well, I need to work on my power and show her when she steps in that ring, like, hey, I got some pop too. I mean, wouldn't you think that'd be wise? I would think that's happening, right?
I think it's just one of those things where she was so successful in the amateurs. It's like she's turned professional and it's like, you know, why change it? I think we did see that, didn't we? Like when we had like your Lomachenkos and all those successful guys, people started to realize that, okay, like you could actually go from amateur to pro and you don't necessarily need to change, because there used to be that odd thing of where, like, you know, amateur boxing used to be just be like tag, you know, like, whoop, and then you're just fencing and you just get away. So you had to change it a lot. Whereas obviously when the rules changed in amateur boxing, it was a little bit more professional style. So guys are kind of like acclimatizing better now and they don't have to change as much. And it seems to be like Carissa's kind of done that. She doesn't sit down on her punches too much. Or maybe, you know, she just doesn't have the power. You know, maybe she's just, you know, wasn't gifted with that. You know, some people have it, some people don't. So it would be interesting as well, just to see, like, with her ego as well, about, you know, you're not going to knock me out. And, you know, the back and forth that they had, like, is she going to get drawn into it? Like, is she going to be like an Amir Khan, you know, and other guys who we talk about where, you know, when they get clipped, they kind of see red and they want to just stand and bang, instead of, you know, keeping it sensible and be like, you know, I'm going to be the bigger guy. You know, I'm not going to get drawn into your games. So, yeah, it's definitely interesting. It's intriguing. It's me personally, probably the most intrigued I've been about a female fight, boxing match.
I agree with that. And like I said, I mean, we have two fights in the next, you know, couple months. It's this month, actually, at the end of the month, with Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. They're both intriguing. You know, like I said, I stick with my notion, Shields Marshall is more intriguing to me because the knockout power of Marshall is so rare in women's boxing. So, like, I think Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano is going to be a decision, you know. It's hyped up. Hopefully it's a great fight, but I'm expecting a decision. I don't think it's going to be like a knockdown or a knockout, or hopefully there is, but I don't think so. But, you know, I'm at least in the Marshall Shields fight, I'm at least expecting a knockdown, at least, which is great. You know, it adds that excitement factor to women's boxing, just boxing in general. But, you know, like we talked about, you know, it's like being a dead horse. We don't see that many knockouts or even that many knockdowns in women's boxing. And, you know, fans, especially casual fans, but even hardcore boxing fans, they have that bloodthirsty, you know, want for knockouts, knockdowns. So, yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully they announce it soon. I'm assuming they're going to do maybe one press conference in the UK for it, to officially announce it, have them go face to face, you know, talk all the smack. Shields is going to do all these interviews, talk all the smack. It should be exciting. I mean, if she signed to Sky Sports, are they going to do, don't they have like their version of like a HBO face off? Don't they have that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they'll do that for them?
Yeah, I would have thought so. We did obviously the Amir Khan, Kell Brook. So yeah, they're still doing it even after, you know, Eddie left. Yeah, I think they'd miss a trick, wouldn't they, if they didn't? You know, hopefully they don't do pay-per-view though. I'm hoping that
think,
they just...
You think it'd be pay-per-view over there?
I'm hoping they don't.
What's the chance?
Just the purses. I think the purses are probably going to be... Like, I don't see Shields the way that she rates herself and the pay that she seems to think she deserves. I'm thinking
has she ever put out a number of what she thinks she deserves?
One time she did, right? When she was it the Savannah fight, when she was chatting to Eddie about it? Didn't she say to Eddie or somebody one time, like, at least $1 million or something like that, like something along those lines, to come over to the UK to do the fight?
Maybe. I don't remember.
I believe so. That does sound vaguely familiar. I can't remember the exact, but I think it was like You know, like if you want me to come to the UK, I'll come, but it's like seven figures or something like that. You know, which obviously we're seeing for the Taylor Serrano fight. You know, they openly said, you know, that Serrano's now, she got a seven figure, so she's probably getting a million for, you know, that fight, thanks to Jake Paul.
Well, yeah, Jake Paul jumping in. Like Eddie Hearn saw it. He was like, okay, now we can make this fight, you know? Because think about it, that fight especially, that fight would have been on the undercard, maybe a co-main event on another DAZN card. If
Joshua fight, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. Maybe. That fight would have been on the undercard of possibly an AJ fight or something else if Jake Paul never got involved. I mean, I don't think that would have been a main event on its own. Jake Paul moved the needle, you know? So who are they... You know, who's gonna be attributed with the success of that potential event? Is it gonna be Eddie Hearn? Is it gonna be the fighters? Or is it gonna be Jake Paul? Is it gonna be all of them? I think Jake Paul deserves a lot of credit there.
But yeah, definitely. I mean, he brings, you know, a lot of eyes, doesn't he? He knows what to say to get people on his side, and he also knows what to say to get people's backs up, doesn't it? Like, oh, I would knock out, you know, Conor McGregor, you know, I would knock out Canelo. Like, he knows what he's doing. But yeah, yeah. I mean, like getting back to the fight, I hope that it's just on regular Sky so it can reach, you know, so it's, you know, beamed into millions of houses in the UK. You know, don't stick it on there for like, you know, pay-per-view for like $15, $20 or something like that. You know, 'cause I think that'll just, you know, massively limit the amount of people that are gonna purchase it unless you really stack the undercard.
I know, I'm intrigued to see what the undercard is like, but either way, we got two good women's fights or two good fights in the next couple months. Next, you know, hopefully, I'm assuming what Shields Marshall is potentially going to happen. What, maybe July?
Yeah, it sounds like it from what I think Ben Shalom was talking about on an interview that I was watching. It's pretty much done, he said. I think they just need to kind of like finish the last few things, but it sounds like June or July, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it seems like, but whatever. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm definitely looking forward to that. Also on the card, Florian Marcu gets the fourth round TKO over Chris Jenkins. This was for the IBF International Welterweight title. What do you think about Marcu's performance and where does he go from here?
I don't know what Sonny Edwards was watching because I saw on Twitter that he was like, oh my God, what a performance from Marcu. I think he lost pretty much every single round.
Really?
Yeah, I thought he was terrible. Until he, you know, Jenkins, he just got caught. You know, he's never lacked power, you know, Marcu. That's the one thing he kind of relies on, really. He's still very, very rigid. You know, his punches don't seem to throw. I think he throws them like with his shoulder instead of just using, you know, his body, using his torso and like twisting into it. He kind of just, everything's very, very stiff, very heavy. So yeah, he's still, but you know, he's got a good fan base. He only took up boxing like 3 years ago to be, you know, like 11-0 with an IBF International Welterweight title after 3 years. You know, it's respect him. Chris Jenkins was a good boxer. You know, 33, so he's, you know, a little bit older, but not, you know, massively over the hill. Used to be a British champion only a couple of years ago. Yeah, I mean, he caught him and got the job done eventually, but he wasn't winning. You know, he wasn't boxing his head off and all this sort of stuff that you could see some people on Twitter say, because I saw Sonny said, like, oh my God, what a performance. And then pretty much every single comment was like, dude, he lost every single round until he knocked him out. So
yeah.
I mean, he got the job done, though. That's all we can say, right? And he needs to move very, very, very slowly. So going out there and calling out Amir Khan afterwards.
That was, yeah, it was something. It gets your name in there. I mean, that's why he was doing it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you got to strike while the iron's hot, I guess. You know, you're better off losing in a bigger payday to someone like Khan or Kell Brook than, you know, potentially losing a 12-round decision to Chris Jenkins for a lot less money, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, it's something. Remember when Adrian Broner used to call out Floyd Mayweather? And then people were like, oh, wow. But like everybody kind of knew realistically, okay, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I think I remember Broner called out Mayweather after, I forgot who he beat. It was like on a random card.
When he came over to the UK that time?
No, I don't think it was in the UK. It was in the US somewhere. But Broner called out Mayweather right after. Mayweather was in attendance, and he was like, he said something like, "Oh, he got to see me." You know, he got to see me, like calling him out. And I'm just like, "What? What are you talking about?" Like, and Mayweather's just, they put the camera on it, and Mayweather's just like smiling, like laughing, like, "Okay," you know. And then Broner goes on to like lose, and then like fight to a draw with like Jesse Vargas, and lose to Mikey, and you know. But you think Broner comes back later this year or no?
I think he has to, dude. I think money-wise, I think he's blown it all from, you know, stuff that he's put on Instagram and stuff like that. I think he probably needs to come back. He's probably just keeping himself, you know, ticking over, maybe trying to lose some pounds, because I don't think he's going to get down to 140 now due to age. But, call out a few names and, you know, hopefully get, you know, he still sells, didn't he? That's the thing. At the minute, even though he's not performing well and he's stinking out, he still sells. People still like him.
I know. It's the mouth. The mouth is.
He's pretty. You know, I like watching him. His performances have been pretty poor recently, but, you know, you can't miss a Broner press conference, you know?
It's ridiculous. It's
fucking ridiculously funny, yeah.
Also on the card, Bradley Ray gets the victory over Lucas Dafaluma. Dafaluma was down in the fourth round. And then rounding off the card, Zach Chelly gets the sixth round TKO over Zach Chelly gets the sixth round TKO over Jack. It's Zach against Jack. Against Jack Kilgannon?
Kilgannon.
Kilgannon. Oh, I thought there was an L. Kilgannon. What a name that is. What the hell? What a name that is. Who takes the first loss of his career, Kilgannon. What does this guy have a nickname? Jack Kilgannon?
I don't know. I didn't see anything on BoxRec when I was doing the show notes, but I'm sure he does. I'm going to be interested to see what it was. A bad fight. That, you know, it's good to see Zach Chelly back in there after having some time off over COVID. I think everyone knew his story about how he became like a substitute teacher and all that sort of stuff. Still a little bit raw, a little bit rough around the edges is Chelly, but slowly but surely, you know, at least British to European level, in my opinion. He kind of still has that like very muscular but slow and rigid type of style. He needs to get maybe a little bit more loose, instead of every single shot doesn't need to be a knockout shot. You know, right. You can just kind of like set it up, then play the hard one instead of doing what he does so far. But yeah, 11-1. So he's doing something right.
It works out. Moving on to fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 9th of April, from the Super Arena in Saitama, Japan. I think I said that right. On DAZN, this was supposed to happen last December 2021, but the COVID cases around that time, especially in that region, were pretty high, so they had to push it. So now, hopefully, between now, as of this recording, this Saturday, it's still going on. Triple G returns. Gennady Golovkin, the former unified undisputed middleweight world champion, goes up against Ryota Murata. This is for the WBA and IBF middleweight world championships. Like I said, this was supposed to happen back in December, but COVID affected that, so they had to push it. And they wanted to have this fight in Japan because that was essentially where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. Murata's going to have a big fan base there and bring them out. I've seen latest videos of Triple G training. You know, he looks good. He's always a hard worker. He trains hard. You know, you can't really fault him for the lack of discipline, because he does. He trains hard. You know, he puts in a lot of work in the gym and his training routine and all that. But I think he's already 40, I think. So, or he's close to 40. I believe he is 40. I'm just interested to see, because obviously, like, we, you know, unless you're Bernard Hopkins, being able to fight until 50, Father Time will catch up to you. And, you know, that's, I'm looking forward to see how Triple G reacts. I mean, when he fought his last fight during the pandemic, I believe he fought
Steve Rolls.
Was it Steve Rolls?
And Derevchenko, his last two, right?
I believe so, yeah. But when he fought Steve Rolls, you know, he won, he beat him, you know, looked okay. You know, it wasn't too crazy. But obviously this one's going to be in front of the fans. Maybe the energy of the fans is going to change his routine, change his skills a little bit. Golovkin is obviously looking for that Canelo payday, and reportedly that's on the table already. So assuming Canelo wins.
I take that back. Sorry. We forgot about Kamaru Zarameta.
Oh, that's who it was. Yeah.
Retired in the seventh round. It was December 18th, 2020.
Okay. Yeah, that's who we forgot. So that was Golovkin's last fight, December 2020?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's been, what, a year and 3-4 months? He's been out just as long as essentially Ryan Garcia has, who we're going to talk about in a few minutes as well. Yeah, I'm just looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. You know, are we going to, you know, how many times have we seen where, you know, for example, when Victor Ortiz and who was it? What's his name? Lopez.
Josecito.
Josecito Lopez fought. They were both under Golden Boy, I think. And Golden Boy was planning on, okay, Ortiz should win, and then we'll put him in the ring against Canelo. Well, obviously that didn't happen. Lopez beat him, so they put Lopez in there with Canelo. Is there any chance? Is there any chance Murata can disrupt the plans for the trilogy fight of Canelo Triple G?
I don't think so. I think it's a good stylistic matchup for Triple G. Like you said, Triple G seems to keep himself ticking over pretty well. You know, he's had that bit of a long layoff, but at the same time, Murata's not fought for 3 years. Exactly. Murata's last fight was December 2019 against Steve Butler. You know, he's been out. I mean, because of the talk, he did it in Amir Khan. Because of the talk for so long that he was going to get the Triple G fight, he sat and waited. And then, obviously, the fight came and then postponed and then put back till now. So he's just waited and waited and waited for that payday for... You know, because they've been talking about this fight since when he lost to Rob Brandt. You remember?
Right. Yeah.
Because when he lost the title, he then went back, rematched Rob Brandt and won it back. And then they were like, okay, let's do it again. Because they knew, you know, Triple G was just going to sell over in Japan. You know, they were trying to get over there for so long, obviously, to cream that market. So I think it's a good matchup for Triple G, as long as, you know, he just hasn't lost that fight with Father Time, like we always say.
Well, then, yeah, that's what I'm...
And unfortunately, we won't know that, you know, because how many times do you see Kell Brook, people like that, you see them on the scales, and aesthetically, you're like, oh, man, he's had a good camp. Look at him, he's made weight well. But then they get in the ring, and, you know, that's it. The footwork's gone.
Exactly.
You know, the hands are gone, the timing's gone. So we won't know, really, until the first or second round, when you get in there and you're like, okay, Triple G's good, timing's there, the feet look good, the snap's good. And I hope so, because I hope he looks good, and I hope he looks good for when we get the Canelo Triple G fight, the third fight, the trilogy.
If we get it. I think you would agree with me. I think Bivol is a way bigger threat against Canelo than Murata is against Triple G.
Yeah. Stylistically, so, yeah.
If it's anybody who's going to disrupt those plans, it's all in Bivol's hands. You know,
I've said before, Bivol did look bad against Castillo. He also looked bad against Craig Richards. But is that just because of the fact that him and his team were aiming for bigger names, but he couldn't get them? So, right. You know, he kind of was kind of like, you know, like, okay, you know, this guy's like, he's decent, but he's like a 6-7 out of 10, and he couldn't rise. If there's any occasion you're going to rise to, it's going to be fighting Canelo.
Right.
One, because of the payday you're going to get. Two, the chance to become, like, you know, undisputed, to pick up all the different belts and stuff like that. Obviously not undisputed in that weight category, but in general, when you're fighting Canelo, I mean.
Right.
And if you beat him, you get a second huge payday. And it's going to be probably bigger, or twice as big as the first one. So for Bivol, everything's on the line. So yeah, that's, to me, we should see the very best of Bivol.
Do you think there's a rematch clause for Canelo Bivol? If Bivol wins,
100%. Yeah,
there is, huh? If Bivol wins, Canelo gets to invoke a rematch.
You'd be silly not to, wouldn't you? He was the one that the famous one, was it like Frank Warren or something, when they did, like, was it Chris Eubank against like Ben or something, and they didn't put one in, and the guy, was it Ben, went in there and knocked him out or whatever, and you know, they were kind of like, ha ha, we've taken the belts and there's no rematch clause. And I think like Frank Warren went crazy or something. There's some famous story, and I think it was that fight, or, and I'm sure people are going to say on Twitter now, like, oh, you idiot, it wasn't that fight, it was something else. But, you know, it, there's a famous story about them not putting a rematch clause in, and obviously the guys were in there, and daylight robbery, you know, took the belts and ran off. So that is why you see them in the big fights. And
well, it's like Lomachenko Teofimo Lopez too. There was no rematch clause, and Lomachenko got a lot of criticism for that. Like, why wouldn't you put a rematch clause?
Exactly. We complain when there isn't. We complain when there isn't, right?
You know. I know. I think it's kind of funny. It's like, we're like, oh, come on. Like, yeah. But
sometimes it's worth it, right? Like a Canelo Triple G one, you know, that was so close and so controversial. Rematch clause all day long. But there are other fights when guys get sparked out so early, or they lose like a lopsided 12-round decision. We don't want one. But at the same time, another good example is Fury Wilder, right? The third fight was potentially one of the most up and down best fights out of the trilogy. And we were all saying beforehand, did we need to see it? Because the second fight was so one-sided to Tyson Fury. But then we watched it and we were like, hell yeah, probably give me a fourth, you know, because it was that good.
Do we see Triple G in attendance at the Canelo Bivol fight, which I'm assuming is a yes, but do we see a repeat of when they announced the second fight after? No, was it the first, second fight or the first fight? It might have been the first fight. I think it was when Canelo beat Chavez Jr. Remember, Triple G came out right after that win. He came out like an entrance. He got in the ring. They shook hands, and they pretty much announced Canelo Triple G, like in September or whatever month it was, a couple months later. Do we see that again repeated for this matchup between Canelo and Bivol? Does Canelo win, and does Triple G go into the ring? And it's a whole spectacle, you know, WWE style, AEW style, professional wrestling.
That's a good question, because I mean, there is some legit bad blood there. And does DAZN want it and they can convince both of them, I guess? I don't see Triple G really being the sort of guy that's into that kind of promotion, because very rarely do you see Triple G in the papers.
I don't think he'd be into it, but I think he would, like, they ask him, like, hey, I mean, you never know. He could decline it and reject him. Like, no, I don't care about him. I don't want to do that. He'll be in attendance, but.
And just Canelo, like, does Canelo kind of like think to himself, I don't want him in the ring. Like, if I beat Bivol, that's my moment. Like, you're not taking that moment away from me. That's a good question. I think maybe if DAZN push it so much.
I think they are. They're going to try to.
Yeah, maybe they'll do that. But you got to get both of them to agree to it. I don't know whether they
would. Well, yeah, but like, I think it for TV purposes and for publicity, I think it'd be great, because I think the first person to like, really talk shit during that moment is going to be Canelo. And like, you know, because remember when they faced off, I think it might have been the second fight in Las Vegas for the weigh-in, not the weigh-in, or it might have been the weigh-in or something. And, you know, they kind of pushed each other and Canelo kind of, you know, got a little bit mad and stuff like that. I mean, Canelo seems like he's really pissed off, because he's been talking shit about me, you know, like
the drug test.
Yeah. And I think for TV purposes and publicity, I think they should. If they can convince both of them, Triple G will be in attendance. He has to be. They're going to put the camera on him throughout the night, especially at the end of the night. And then when Chris Mannix goes in to interview Canelo, he's going to ask him typical questions, then get to Triple G. There's a man sitting ringside. Can we call him in? Or maybe they'll call him in before, you know? But if you ask Canelo, can we call him into the ring? Can we bring him here? And what if Canelo says, no, this is my ring? People are going to be like, oh, wow. Or what if he says, oh, yeah, bring him in here? So I think there's a theater there that they need to explore, and they need to try to get those guys to at least agree to be around each other. After that, who cares? Who cares what they do? Because whatever they do, especially if they like go at each other, they talk all this smack to each other, it's only going to give more publicity to the fight, assuming it's not fake, you know?
The DAZN's first pay-per-view?
No, it's going to be Canelo Bivol. It's the first pay-per-view. It would be DAZN's second pay-per-view unless AJ fights.
Yeah, they haven't even decided where AJ is going to go yet.
Yeah, so unless AJ fights before Triple G, the potential Triple G Canelo trilogy, it might be back-to-back Canelo pay-per-views.
That's going to be interesting because you're looking at, what, $50 million just for the main event, right?
Is that how much it is?
I think Canelo's on a guarantee of what, like 30-something, 36, and I think Golovkin gets about 12.
No, Canelo's... What did Canelo make for this last fight? He made... What did he make?
It's 30-something. I can't remember the top of my head after that new deal he signed. Because it was a 3-fight deal, right?
I know, but like, I think... I think we talked about it. Where did we see the breakdown where he's making like over $50 million for these fights now? Like, because there was something we were talking about and we were reading where like, oh, you know, he was... When he was with Golden Boy and he had the 11-fight, 12-fight deal or something with DAZN, he was getting paid like $40 million, $36 million or something, which was obviously a ton of money. And then he got out of the agreement and pretty much still stuck with DAZN kind of on a fight-by-fight basis or a 2-fight deal. And
according to Mike Coppinger, it's $160 million for 3 fights. Bivol, Golovkin, and then a 3rd fight in December.
Yeah, so that's...
$53
million. 50-something million, so... Canelo's obviously going to get the biggest share of the pie.
So you're looking at closer to 60, 65 million then for that fight.
Yeah,
so
and I mean, how do they distribute, you know, all that money to him, you know? Do they say like, okay, for this fight, you'll get this, or for this fight, or does Canelo have a say like, okay, no, you're going to pay me the most for this fight? Or, you know, those are details I'm interested in. Like, how does it work? Like, how do you spread it out? Or is it the same? Do they just split it fight by fight by fight? You know? But it's interesting. It's interesting. But yeah, I mean, obviously, Father Time is the X factor here. How's Triple G going to look? He can look in peak physical condition as he has been looking on training videos. But when he gets in there being 40 years old, I mean, when they fought, how old was he when they fought the first time in 2016? Was it 2016 or 2017 when they fought the first time?
I'll pull it up now.
I think it was 2017. I think it was 2017, right?
The first fight was, yeah, September 2017.
Yeah. And then the next one was in 2018.
Yeah, September 2018.
So essentially 5 years. So Triple G was what? 35? And now he's 40 getting the trilogy. 5 years is a long time. For 5 years, when you're at that age, it's a lot. You're going to feel the differences physically. And for Canelo, the last 5 years, he's gotten better, which is scary. And he's still like in the midst of his prime. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, if that all goes according to plan, we'll preview it as it comes forward. But right now, I think if that fight happens, I think Canelo knocks him out. I just think the 5 years is too long. You know, Triple G is going to try his hardest, but I think Canelo knocks him out. I think the 5 years hasn't been kind to Triple G in terms of physicality. He's still going to, I still have confidence that he's still going to have talent, and, you know, he should stop Murata, especially with Murata's long inactive streak, you know, of not having a fight in like 3 years. But Canelo in these 5 years since that last fight, he's gotten dangerously scary, you know, unifying 168, not like breaking Billy Joe Saunders' orbital bone, stopping Caleb Plant, stopping Sergey Kovalev. It's scary. So who knows? But, you know, DAZN better hope they're hoping so much. They're hoping so much that both of them win these fights, because then they can put that fight on and maybe try to make some profit off of it, because they're each going to make combined, like you said, maybe $80 million, you know?
It's going to be a lot, man. Like,
that's a ton of money.
They must do astronomical numbers in terms of viewership for DAZN to gamble that amount on them.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. You know, like, and even then paying the fighters that type of money, like, it's still going to be extremely difficult to make that money back.
No commercials, no advertisements.
Yeah. Oh no, they're gonna have something. DAZN's been slowly inserting certain things. They're gonna have stuff, and they're gonna charge a ton of money for it. But it's still a heavy uphill battle to make that money back. It's one thing to try to break even. It's another step, and it's another thing to make a profit from an event like that. It's hard. Well,
Top Rank, look at the Fury Wilder, and they're heavyweights.
Exactly. And they lost money on that. So, oh man, that's going to be wild. But yeah, I'm looking forward. I'm finally glad Gennady Golovkin's coming back, you know, after almost a year and a half, just under a year and a half. And Japan, I'm assuming, have you seen any trending or anything about ticket sales over there, about that arena?
No, they haven't said, but I'm sure with, you know, the Asian fans, they love a big fight, and it's probably the, you know, it'll be like Canelo going to the UK. They're going to go, okay, this is going to be our one and only chance to see Triple G. Probably sells out in 30 minutes.
And the crazy thing about it is that Triple G and his team are going to use the success of that event. Like, oh no, look, he went to Japan. He sold that place out. You know, he sold this many tickets, 20,000 seats or something like that. And, you know, the ratings over there were this much or something like that. They're going to use that at the negotiation table, unless it's already like set in stone. But, you know, that's one big thing that they did with Triple G, like you do with any fighter, but with Triple G, that Tom Lawler helped to do, where he took Triple G to different venues, Madison Square Garden, the Forum a couple times, to the UK. And it was, you know, a couple of them were HBO pay-per-view, and they used that as a part of his negotiation power. Like, you know, he sold out arenas all over the world, and don't be surprised, which obviously from a business perspective, Triple G and his team are going to use Japan too. Like, hey, look, throughout my career, I've sold out all these arenas. You know, I've drawn, you know, 15,000-20,000 people to each of these arenas, you know, and the ratings have been this much. So, you know, it all comes down to negotiation power in addition to talent. Moving on, also this upcoming weekend from the Virgin Hotels in Las Vegas, Nevada on Showtime. Once again, Erickson Lubin, 24-1, goes up against Sebastian, the 6'7", 154-pounder, Sebastian Fondura, 18-0-1. This is for the WBC Interim Super Welterweight title. We were talking about this earlier today, just before we came on air. I'm very excited for this fight. This might be I'm probably the most intrigued about this fight, about any of the weekend, including the Ryan Garcia, including the Gennady Golovkin and all that. I'm intrigued on this fight because Lubin, ever since he got knocked out by Charlo a couple years ago, which was right here in Los Angeles at the USC Galen Center, I think at the time Lubin was 23 years old. He was, you know, a young guy. He got knocked out. I was there and I saw him. I was like, it was pretty nasty. Charlo caught him pretty well. But ever since then, Lubin's really improved. Erickson Lubin's really improved, and he's fought well, and you can tell he's really honed his skills. And then Fondura, obviously, just the length that he has, the height, making that weight, is kind of what makes him kind of difficult to fight. If you want to ask me, I think Lubin still takes this. What do you think?
Great matchup. Honestly, a lot of people on Twitter have been saying this week how good of a matchup it is. Like you said, yeah, Lubin definitely has good, you know, a good potential. He, you know, was one of those guys that kind of hit the pro scene and everybody was kind of behind him until he ran into Charlo, and Charlo just caught him with a perfect uppercut that just stopped him straight in his tracks and knocked him out. Fondura just, he's so different, isn't he? Because he's like 6'7", absolutely enormous for the weight, but actually fights up close because he said in one of those like 24/7s or behind the scenes type things that when he first started boxing, he wasn't that tall. So he kind of was like, you know, just an everyday fighter, liked to fight up close, really liked to fight on the inside, and then just had some crazy growth spurt. It's
crazy.
And now he's like 6'7". So he weirdly doesn't really use his attributes like he could, because he could stink out a lot of fights in, you know, that weight division because he's so enormously tall.
Yeah.
So he should really learn how to do that, because then he'd be like, he's got a two-pronged attack. He's got an A and a B. But at the minute, he loves to fight up close. So
I think he'll eventually learn that skill, though, but it's going to be a while.
Yeah, I think he should definitely at least try to do that, but he doesn't seem to really rely on that at the minute. Going off that, if he fights like we normally see, I think I would maybe go with Lubin, but I think Fundora is just one of those guys, though, that he's maybe like another Josh Warrington to me, where you're kind of back against him, but he always manages to come through.
No, yeah, I think I'm not picking Lubin like, you know, 100-1 odds or something like that. You know, I think, like you said, I think that's a good analogy, where he's like, Fundora is like Warrington, where you're just like, you pick against him, but he always finds a way to win.
Yeah, but Lubin's more of a polished, you know, nice to watch type of fighter. So you sometimes go with him because he's attractive. He's kind of flashy at times, where
he's improved a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Lubin is good. I mean, I think it was more of a confidence thing, wasn't it? I think most people were worried about, like, okay, that was a bad knockout. Like, is he going to come back? And, you know, is he going to have the confidence in him still because of the way that he lost? And I think they've done him very well, because that was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
This is probably his biggest fight since. Would you agree with that? Or?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's,
yeah,
they've taken a long time to, you know, kind of get him back in there. I mean, because like you said, he was really young at the time. So, you know, he's probably just hitting like his peak kind of like adult years, where he fills out and finds himself.
Right.
I would maybe go Lubin in a close decision. Wouldn't be surprised overly, you know, if Fundora won, it is really a, you know, a 50-50.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this is my most intriguing fight of the weekend. So, imagine Lubin, either way, a win for either one is going to be good for the career of each respective one. Like, you know, if Lubin wins, it'll be a good win. But if Fundora wins, he's going to get way more stock out of it than Lubin would if he wins. You know, I think if Fundora wins, it's going to be huge for him. Like, oh my God, that's a significant win. That is huge.
Coachella on fire.
Yeah.
Chocolatito, Fundora.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. Pun intended, 6'7", huge and all that stuff. But yeah, I'm definitely intrigued on this fight. Also on the card, Tony Harrison, 28-3-1, goes up against Sergio Garcia. This is actually a pretty decent fight, too. You know, we got some good matchups here on this card, right?
Yeah, I love watching Tony Harrison. He's just got everything about him. He just switches off.
Yeah.
If he had, like, the vision to just go, like, all the way through and just keep it, you know, himself on fire and not take rounds off or parts of round off, unbelievable. He'd still be a champ. Because the first time he fought Jallo, we spanked him. And then the second time he was spanking him, and then he switched off. And then, you know, that was all that she wrote. And, you know, Charlo definitely just took that belt and was running as far away from Tony Harrison as he could. Yeah, he's talented. I really like watching him fight.
Yeah, it's a good card. Good card, that Showtime card. You know, I'm gonna try to catch it. And also this Saturday, I'm telling you, this weekend has a pretty decent names fighting. You know, Triple G, Lubin, Fundora, Harrison. Got some pretty decent names fighting this weekend, you know. A lot of eyeballs on boxing this weekend. From the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas, on DAZN, Ryan Garcia, your favorite fighter, returns to the ring since January of 2020, I believe. Or was it 2021? I'm sorry, 2021. As he goes up against Emmanuel Tego, 32-1. I'm not really familiar with Tego too much. Are you familiar with him? Like, what are we looking at here?
Tego, you know, he was very highly ranked. I think it was in the WBO ranks for some time. Fought a lot of his fights, you know, back home. Came over here, supposed to be like a heavy, you know, heavy-handed, come-forward fighter, you know, muscular. Just wants to, like, walk you down. Slightly limited, I would say. Perfect kind of style. A lot of the people that Ryan fights, you know, they're smaller, come forward fighters. So, you know, it's an, kind of like an easy target for Ryan, because, you know, if you look at Ryan Starr, you would imagine that the people that are going to trouble him really are you people that, you know, box and move, because Ryan likes to throw, you know, very heavy-handed shots. He's very flat-footed, which is obviously where he gets, you know, and helps generate all of his power. So, you know, later down his career, when he has to fight people that, you know, are going to box around him and not just, you know, want to stand and trade, then that's, I think, where Ryan's going to have, you know, have some trouble. But, you know, I think he should come through this. I would be shocked if, you know, if he didn't, especially with him coming back from all the troubles he had. You know, I think they picked it very wisely because, as usual, Ryan was calling out all of these names and we don't get them. We get someone completely different. So this is really like more of a comeback fight. And then hopefully, but, you know, we'll probably not, you know, we'll hopefully see him in there with someone. Like we've always said, you kind of get sick of saying it, don't we? Like a Gervonta Davis. I'd be happy to see him fight Rolly to get that kind of like.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, Rolly obviously, you know, beat him up in sparring. Rolly's not going to be scared of him. You know, Rolly's going to try and go in there and walk him down, because I've said before, I think that eventually when people come to realize it, Ryan can't really go backwards. Very, very flat-footed, terrible feet, just very, very powerful. I think he really is, as I've said it before, he's a lightweight Deontay Wilder. I think when somebody gets in there who's not scared of his speed and not scared of his power, he'll come unstuck, because we've seen it in sparring, and we live in Southern California and we've heard all the rumors. So it's,
yeah, and he just left, you know, Eddie Reynoso and Canelo's camp. I mean, you know,
Joe Goosen's a good.
No, Joe Goosen's good, but like, you can be the best trainer in the world, but if your fighter doesn't have the discipline, you know, and he's just worried about hitting, you know, the speed bag or whatever, and posting videos online, I mean, it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, that's what I'm interested to see. Like, we all know Joe Goosen is a very disciplined trainer. He's a hard trainer. He puts you to work. It's not easy, but
he's not got a full gym. That's the problem. Like, can he turn down a payday? Eddie Reynoso has Canelo. He has all these other guys, and his gym's hot, where Eddie can say to Ryan, like, either you get your ass here on time or get out.
Right.
Whereas Joe Goosen's got Chris Areola, that Vito Milanecki.
Milanecki, yeah.
And that's it. You know, can you go Joe Goosen turn down the type of paydays, you know, the type of percentage that Ryan's going to bring into the gym? No, probably not.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, is it, if Joe Goosen had a stable like Eddie Reynoso, does he still take on a Ryan Garcia? You know, I'm sure he says like, oh yeah, you know, but like, you're going to have to work around my other fighters. You know, I mean,
that's in reality, that's how it should be. It's like having a disruptive person at work who gets away with a lot and then you don't. Right, you're going to be, at the end of the day, you're going to be like, well, why does this guy get away with this all the time? Like, he's always late. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't do the runs. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. But that's going to be Ryan's downfall, right? You know, like, I'm sure he earns a lot of money from Instagram, and maybe he doesn't need boxing, but at the minute he's in it, so why not give it his all, you know, whilst he's here? Because, you know, eventually he's going to keep doing that and doing that and doing that, and he's going to lose, you know. Taking it that well.
I'm interested to see how Joe Goosen, because obviously we know that Ryan Garcia used to train with Joe Goosen in the earlier days in his career. But now that he trained with Eddie Reynoso for a couple fights, and now he left, and this is his first fight back with Joe Goosen at this stage in his career, I'm interested to see, you know, like anybody, you're always interested to see, okay, what changed in your style? You know, you went to a different trainer. Is anything going to change? Or are we still going to see the same Ryan Garcia, which I think we are. I think even if they teach him certain things in training with a new coach or a new trainer, as soon as he gets hit or he gets in that ring, he reverts back to something that he's familiar with, which is straight up and down, flat footed. When he starts doing a combination with you, he just plants his feet and he doesn't move his feet. He just, it's his whole upper body. It's his whole upper body, like, and his feet just stay planted in the ground, like he's in two holes, and it's just literally, it's his whole upper body. It's just like twisting his torso. That's what I'm interested to see. I'm like, okay, did you add anything to your arsenal? Because even with Eddie Reynoso, it didn't really. I mean, like, I feel with Eddie Reynoso, he didn't really add anything visible, but he had the heart, like, especially when he beat Campbell. When Campbell knocked him down, I was like, I think everybody thought, like, oh, well, here we go. This is the end. Everybody knew it. And he came back and he stopped him with a nasty liver shot, which was an awesome punch. And he stopped him. And you can tell he was all emotional after it. In the victory and everything, he jumps into Eddie Reynoso's hand or arms and all that stuff. And I thought, okay, this kid's got a lot of momentum. That's a huge confidence booster. You know, even if he doesn't show anything like physically in the ring, any visible skills that he might have learned, he's going to have the confidence and the heart. And Eddie Reynoso and Canelo are at least giving him that, which sometimes is a lot better than anything you can see visually. But him having the issues that he's had with Canelo, and he ends up leaving, and he wants to, you know, he doesn't leave on bad terms, and they're both kind of talking smack about each other. And now he goes with Joe Goosen. Are we going to see anything visible? Is it going to be the same? I mean, obviously he's a polarizing figure. He could be such a huge star. I think he can be bigger. I think I've said this before. If he ends up like fighting, like really beating everybody, and as soon as he fights like the big names and he actually beats these big names, he's like, I think you made the analogy like Amir Khan, where Amir Khan is so famous and so popular because he's been in there and with the big fights with the big fighters, with the dangerous fighters, and people know, like, okay, Khan can get knocked out, he can get knocked down, but he's so polarizing and we want to watch him. I think Ryan Garcia is the same way. I think he's got that Amir Khan kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a like mix. I mean, am I wrong? What do you think?
I agree that he could, but I think the thing about Amir Khan and what sells Amir Khan is he doesn't make any excuses, and he's very like open, and he shows his personality, and you know, he shows what a nice, warm person that he is, you know. And when Khan wins, he's always in spectacular fashion, and when he loses, it's in spectacular fashion. Like when Khan gets knocked out, Khan gets knocked out. Like that's his issue as well. Like, but he's just great to watch. You don't know what's going to happen with him. And I think, you know, Ryan could be like that, you know, but he just needs that. Do you know what he needs? You know, I've just thought of this now, just this minute.
Say it.
He needs to do what Jojo Diaz did. Go away. Whatever Jojo Diaz did, the Jojo Diaz that came back now is an absolute beast. He'll fight anybody, calls them out, actually gets in the ring and fights them. And I think my opinion definitely changed. I think yours did as well. Like, look at him now. Like, whatever he did, he went away, had a quick word with himself, maybe just matured over time. Maybe he was having children, whatever it was. Jojo Diaz needs to give a glass of that to Ryan Garcia.
Do you think that if Ryan wins, do you think Golden Boy tries to make that matchup next? Jojo Diaz, Ryan Garcia? I think they do.
The problem we have with that is Jojo posted today that his next fight's been confirmed. He didn't say who it was. So I'm guessing it's probably not Ryan. But
I feel that, let's just say it's confirmed and it's like in May. They're close enough.
I would like that fight because originally they were supposed to do it, right?
You know, I'm telling you, I think if Jojo fights in May, let's just say it's confirmed, they announce it, he's like, oh, you're going to fight in May or even June, Golden Boy's going to look for the fall to have Ryan and Jojo. I'm telling you, they're going to, I get it. You know, promoters do this. They're going to try to squeeze everything they can about from these in-house fights as much as they can to keep the profits for just one promotion before they have to share him like consistently with other fighters, with other promoters. Cause they're like, oh, well now I have to share the money. So I think Jojo Diaz is the one on the roster for Golden Boy that they're going to say, okay, this is who we're going to try to put 135. But I feel that there's a chance that Ryan Garcia could be like, hey, you know what? Like, I'm getting older. I'm getting bigger. I have to move to 140. He's a tall kid. He's like 5'10", maybe. He's tall and he's long. So, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe two more fights. This fight, I think, is at 139, isn't it? Yeah, this fight with Tego is, I think, contracted at 139. I'm pretty sure it is. So, which, you know, I don't know however you want to read into it. I mean, it's not a world title fight. It's, you know, just not, doesn't really have any significance of that nature. So it's like, okay, why are you going to, you know, make that limit of 135, you know, if you don't really need to? Or is it because, okay, well, I already have a tough time making that weight. So let's just push the weight up a little bit. So, and I think it's at 139. I'm pretty sure it is. I don't know. I'm telling you, I think Ryan moves up to 140 before he, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't fight anybody like any of the big names at 135. And he's like, okay, well, no, my body's, I'm getting older and, you know, I just can't make 135 anymore. So I'm going to move up. But then you got up there like Teofimo Lopez, Jose Ramirez, you know, Jose Zepeda, stuff like that, Arnold Barboza, which are all, you know, mostly all top ranked guys. But yeah, I'm telling you, but he's polarizing, man. He could be a star. He could be a star, especially if he can end up fighting these other big names at 135 and beat them. The kid can be a star, man. I'm telling you, he could be a legitimate pay-per-view star. He really could, because he's so polarizing. Like, there's so many people who, he has his fan base, he has his social media following, and then he has the people who aren't fans of his because they just want to see him get knocked out. You know, a lot of fighters had that who were successful. Mayweather, there's a lot of people who tuned in who hated him, but they're like, well, I want to see him lose. That's why I'm paying $70. That's going to go in his pocket to watch him. I think Ryan Garcia has that similar mix there, where if he can just win, especially win the big ones, he could be a superstar and draw a lot of money. He can draw a lot of money. And I think Oscar De La Hoya realizes that. So they're trying to tread lightly with him to see how it goes. But I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see how he does under back with Joe Goosen, his first fight away from Eddie Reynoso. I'm definitely intrigued. Also on the card here at the Alamo Dome, Gabriel Rosado returning since his loss to Jaime Munguia in Anaheim, California last year, goes up against Shane Mosley Jr. This is actually, I saw this like a week or so ago that it was on the card, and I was like, oh, this, you know, this is kind of a good scrap, you know, two decent names. I think Rosado still beats him. I think Rosado's just, his experience is just too much for Mosley Jr. But, you know, Mosley Jr. has the name. He brings I don't want to say pedigree, but, you know, he has his dad's name, Shane Mosley, and stuff like that. So people are, they tune in like, oh, wow, Shane Mosley's kid, you know, and they look like each other. So I'm intrigued on this fight. I'm intrigued, but how do you think this ends? Does Rosado, well, first off, do you think Rosado wins? And if he does, how does he win?
Yeah, I think Rosado wins. I think he knocks him out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Don't really rate Mosley, really.
Yeah.
Kind of lingered around at local level for a long time under Golden Boy, I think, just...
Yeah, then he tried to do bare knuckle or something else, didn't he?
He went into the contender, didn't he, as well?
Oh, yeah, he tried. He
was in the contender, and that didn't... Then lost to... Well, he had that fight with Jay Quigley for a WBO strap, and then the winner got the shot against Andrade.
Something like that, yeah.
He lost that to Jay Quigley. Yeah, I mean, run out from for Rosado.
From a name perspective for both of these, it's a pretty decent fight. If you look at the names, like, oh, Shane Mosley Jr.'s son. Like, I'm sure there's going to be people intrigued by that. Like, oh, I didn't know he was a fighter. You know, I want to check him out. You know, that in and of itself, from a marketing perspective, could get a couple additional eyeballs to tune in. News and notes of this week's episode of The Last Round. The Monster, Naoya Inoue, and Nonito Donaire are reportedly set to meet again in a rematch of their ESPN 2019 Fight of the Year. Inoue is ESPN's number 3 pound-for-pound boxer. Announced on social media recently that he's set to fight Donaire on June 7th, a Tuesday. So it's during the middle of the week. At the Satyama Super Arena in Japan, where Gennady Golovkin and Murata are actually fighting, like we mentioned earlier. Inoue will enter the ring with two 118-pound titles, while Donaire offers one in the bantamweight title unification. The first fight was excellent. I think, like, everybody would agree that Nonito Donaire gave the monster his hardest fight to date. In a way, still stopped him and still came out the victor. Does anything change in this rematch? What do you think?
It's a good question, but I think that just like we said before, like, how many times can Donaire go to the well and, like, you know, just, you know, pull it back and, you know, rip back those years and look as good as he did.
I think Donaire retires winner, lose, or draw. I think he retires.
I mean, he's been looking good, though, hasn't he? Like, going back down in weight seemed to have actually done him good in his old years.
No, he has, yeah. I'm surprised, too. Going back down in weight, like, wow. Okay.
I mean, if you're a boxing fan, you love Inoue. You love Donaire. I hope it's just another, you know, fight of the year contender. And if Donaire does lose, hopefully he loses on points. He doesn't get knocked out, because he's given us so many good nights over the years. And, you know, if he's going to ride off into the sunset on this last fight, then hopefully, you know, it's just a close, you know, points loss to, you know, a future star in Inoue.
I know. Yeah.
Or maybe even if he loses, just do that thing with where you come back to one time in Vegas, have another little scrap and get the W and go out on a win.
Either way, I'm hoping it can live up to the hype of the first fight, because the first fight was excellent too. Like I said, Donaire gave Inoue his toughest fight to date. Let's see if he does it again. Let's see if Donaire brings something extra to the table in this rematch. And if Donaire wins, they sets it up for a trilogy. You know, I'm sure right. The monster in a way is going to be like, oh, forget that. Give me the third fight. We split the first two. And I'm sure Donaire is going to try so hard to do that.
It's the biggest fight in that division, isn't it? You know, those guys, you know, fighting in somewhere like Japan. Like, I'm sure Donaire is an absolute superstar over there.
Oh, yeah.
And so is Inoue. So, you know, why not? You know, even if it's a close fight, you know, those.
Is Inoue still signed with Top Rank?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they really haven't.
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously supposed to fight, wasn't he, just as the COVID came. I actually had a hotel booked and I was going to go to Vegas for that. And obviously it got called off. The fight was in April and, COVID hit in March. They called it all off.
Do you think he's still signed to them, or do you think they just kind of let him go? Like, COVID kind of messed all the plans, so, you know, we'll release you from the contract.
I haven't heard anything. That is a good question. I know that he had a recent fight, didn't he, like, back home on a very small card? Maybe that was just like a little warm-up to get him out. But as far as I know, I think he is still signed. You know, I think it would be, you know, a silly move, really, by Top Rank to do something like that.
Yeah, but, I mean, you never know. Business.
Yeah, exactly. If he's not getting the fights, then maybe they would do something like that. But obviously, this is a huge fight for them now. One of the best fights of the year. You know, hopefully it's on a decent time for us. I think last time it was on at like stupid o'clock in the morning, right?
Yeah, and now it's in the middle of the week. So I don't even know if the other one was in the middle of the week. But either way, hopefully it's another great fight in this rematch. June 7th, so hopefully nothing changes between now and then. Rounding off this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast, Rashidi Ellis has returned from the shadows, wherever he was, and he recently announced that he has signed with Premier Boxing Champions, Al Haymon's PBC. Ellis has not fought since October 2020 in a decision win over Alexis Rocha when Ellis was still with Golden Boy, and Rocha, obviously, just coming off a victory against Blair Cobbs after taking over the main event from Virgil Ortiz and Michael McKinson. Have we got any reports or anything credible in terms of why Ellis and Golden Boy kind of drifted apart, or you know, what have we heard anything? Because, I mean, coming off a win and he beats one of your best young guys in your stable, and then he's on the shelf. I mean, was there bad blood? I wonder what happened.
I think from Ellis's point of view, it was just all down to they didn't really ever get him the fights. He wasn't very active. Been in the Southern California area. We've known for a while that he's been highly rated in a lot of the gyms. You know, he has been a sparring partner for a long time for Canelo. And I know that that camp, you know, rate him very highly. You know, he's often seen at Buddy McGurk's gym, you know, trains out of there a lot with his brother. Very respected by a lot of people. I remember seeing not too long back, Sam Jones talking about how he was kind of like one of the most underrated or most kind of like forgotten about, you know, like you kind of described, you know, like somebody that was kind of like in the shadows. So I think a good move over to PBC is good. Very, very good for him in terms of, you know, the stable of talent that they have over there. So coming out party for someone like Rashidi Ellis, if you're able to get some money on, you know, him picking up a world title in the next few years. But that weight category now, like Ellis is really good. Obviously, you've got Ennis, you know, who's really, really good. Virgil Ortiz. I'm probably missing somebody. I'm sure someone's probably sat there screaming at me.
Like you said, him signing with PBC, let's just, you know, obviously PBC is going to try to keep him in the round robin at welterweight. I mean, think about it. You got him and Ennis now under the same banner with Al Haymon. They're obviously going to try to build those guys up and eventually meet them together. I think if that fight potentially happens first, has more of a likely chance to happen first between Ellis and Boots Ennis than Ennis and Virgil Ortiz, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll probably give. Yeah, I'm sure they'll give Ellis somebody, one of the people coming down the other side of the hill. You're looking at like Danny Garcia or Keith Thurman. Then you've got what? Who else?
I don't know. Danny Garcia has been talking about Terrence Crawford, and they've been talking. You know, never know.
I think we said it on here, or maybe I said it. I think when we were chatting one time about like I could see them doing that, giving like Crawford like a 3-fight deal. The first one's like a Danny Garcia, the second one's like an Errol Spence, and then like an Errol Spence rematch or something like that. It's just something you can see, you know, like Crawford's obviously going to want a couple of fights, at least the big fight, and they want something to in return, right? You know, they want a smaller fighter that where they can maybe make a return, because the purse is for, you know, Crawford and Spence. It's going to be, you know, probably going to have to be pay-per-view. It's going to have to do good numbers. It's going to have to do a good gate for them to see any type of return. So, you know, I think even like a Danny Garcia fight is going to be a fairly big purse. You know, Danny's done some big purses over the years.
Yeah, any of those fighters that Crawford's going to fight, Thurman, Garcia, especially Spence, they're going to demand big purses. They are. I think all those fighters are a little bit different than Sean Porter is. Sean Porter went to ESPN, went to Top Rank. You know, he showed his grit. He's like, okay, I'll go over there. It was a great fight. Crawford ended up stopping him, but I think Porter is a different breed in a sense than the others, you know, in a way, in terms of from the business side. Porter goes across the street, quote unquote. But either way, going back to Rashidi Ellis, him signing with PBC is probably the best move for his career. You know, it's unfortunate that him and Golden Boy didn't work out. Whatever happened, I know he was, you know, like you said, they couldn't get him the fights or anything like that, so they kind of kept him on the shelf or whatever. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And he found his way back into the fold with the best stable, the best promoter that has the best moneymakers in that division. So it works out for him. It definitely works out for him. And I'm definitely looking forward to see how PBC, you know, brings him out for his first fight and how they keep him progressing forward. But once again, guys, thank you again for listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. We always and definitely appreciate it. As we begin to sign off here, Mike, go ahead and let them know once again where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week. We'll be talking about all those fights that we just previewed and looking forward to the Isaac Cruz, Gamboa, Errol Spence, Ugas, and they also have a matchroom crowd, Chris Billum-Smith against Tommy McCarthy rematch. So be sure to join us next week.
We're coming back. So for once again, for my co-host, Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is the last round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.